you say. In that same way here, when your opportunities come to evolve, to change, and they come, this is when you test out your new inner self. You can't look back. You are not the same person. It's what you need to do to animate your wiring. This is how you turn it on. We are in a new world. I can't say that again, which means you're a new person. You don't know the person you are, and you're going to spend the rest of your life getting to know a new person. There's something very exciting about that. How can you not be thrilled about that? That's number one. Number two, every day in this world is going to bring us new challenges and new opportunities because this world is changing so fast. Number three, you don't know the potential you have hidden in your energetic anatomy. You may look at yourself and say, I don't have a college degree in this or that. And here's what you don't get. The education of your energetic scholarship is fundamentally mystical. The energetic of your biological is academic. Academic scholarship to your soul is useless. It's useless. It doesn't do it any good. What your energetic self needs to understand are mystical laws. How to pray, how to be reflective, how to be centered, how to be strong in those ways. It has to understand how to signal to you an intuitive hit. This is evolving. This is evolving. How to evolve into this different realm of understanding how you are now functioning. That you are now functioning in a parallel reality with two different, very different signals of information and knowledge. And that this knowledge, your inner scope of knowledge, is as legitimate, valued, essential, necessary, as whatever mental education, intellectual scholarship you've ever gone after. That stage of evolution is the partnership of these two very brilliant skills that you now need to introduce into your life. The patterns and habits that nurture this inner world. As much as you have to nurture your outer world for the sake of health. If your body requires exercise, so your inner world requires reflection and quiet time. Both are true. If you like to take your outer body to a spa and say, you know, I really need to get a massage and I really need to get acupuncture or get that kind of alignment, I will assure you that your inner body needs the same kind of alignment, and it's called being congruent. The impulse in this evolutionary stage, where it's moving you finally, is that you develop an appetite to function differently in the world. You know, evolution, that's a big word. That's a huge word. And the descriptions I'm giving of these words, you know, involution, integration, evolution, they don't fit the power of what I'm talking about. And it's kind of like saying Grand Canyon, it's a hole and it's pretty. So when I say to you that a spiritual throbbing of evolution is at work in you. And maybe at this point it's subtle. But subtle does not mean powerless. Subtle means soft. It means I'm noticing something. And sometimes at the subtle stage, you notice it because you're being disturbed. But you don't know why. But there's disruption in your atmosphere. So you might notice disruption, but you're not sure, like a pecking at the window, but it's soft. And you might say there's some kind of sound, but I can't see why, and I can't find it. There's like a pecking at your window, and you're not sure why. And that disruption just won't leave you. You keep attending to it, but you can't spot it. And what happens is that there is a feeling that starts growing in you. And that is a feeling that something is missing. An appetite is being born in you. And it's the appetite for something, but you're not sure what. Like going to a restaurant saying, what do you want? I don't know. Are you hungry? Yeah. Well, what? Nothing quite. Nothing appeals to me. But an appetite is getting animated. You're developing a taste for what? I'm not sure. Are you hungry? Yeah. Are you starving yet? No. Okay. We'll wait till you're starving. We'll wait till you're starving. Now, the way heaven works is that it waits till you're starving. Because then you don't argue. You just take what it serves. That's how it works. It plays dirty sometimes. But it waits till you're starving. But what you're generally served is the thing you end up loving the most. But the thing you would never have ordered on the menu. This stage of evolution is about you developing a starving appetite for love. But it's left up to you. It would be all about you and finding endless ways people would love and adore you. So left up to you, it wouldn't work. Because you would just, are they loving me? Are they noticing me? Have they seen me? Did they know I did this? Here's my business card. It's all about you. Remember that left up to you, everything would be about you. And only you. Here, you develop an appetite. You can't figure out what it is. And you don't even want that appetite. And then one day, somehow, you're in a situation, however that situation forms, you're among strangers. You're in a strange place. And you discover you have an ability you didn't know you had. Maybe you're the problem solver for problems you didn't even know. What the heck? These aren't your problems. But you're the one that somehow knows how to. You're the one they start looking toward. It just so happens you happen to have something. You don't even know what it is, but if you did, you'd get rid of it and give it to them. Here, you use it. But unfortunately, it happens to be you. The way you're wired, the way you're built, the common sense you have, the gut instincts you have, just you. It's your package. You get this horrible gut feeling, go this way. You don't want to. You think they're nothing but trouble. These people are trouble. They're dependent. They're going to dump it all on me. And that voice says, go this way. Your intuition has become too clear. Far too clear. It's too late. You've made that system too clear. You've become too good. You know the signal now. You know the game. You can't run. You can't hide. There's no place to go. The inner world is far too clear to you. You know exactly the instruction. You got to go. And so it begins. Your assignment, your awakening begins. And exactly where you would never choose. You got to be kidding. No, there's no kidding. And you discover you're needed, not little, huge. Not your money, not anything, you. You're needed. In a short while, you begin to thrive in ways you never thought you could thrive because they spot a garden in you. And what comes awake is what's called your charism, a grace you didn't know you had, a grace that's in you that has your name on it. This is you, your grace, your charism. What's your charism? You can't identify that. You couldn't if you tried. It's your mystical content. It's the grace by which God knows you. And when you are in your path of love, it is the grace that awakens, the grace by which heaven knows you, your charism. It is that which only you have. It's that grace that people say, there's no one like you. Why? I don't know. There just isn't. It's that person. That person has that. What's that something? I don't know. It says it's your charism. They look at you. They want to grab that. They can't get enough of it. What did you give them? Get away from me. Nope. Too late. They're on to you. They're on to you. And if you look really clearly, nobody felt that way about you before. They could take or leave you. Oh, they liked you. Maybe they loved you. Now they follow you like flies. Now you're necessary. You're essential. The awakened you. You don't have to look, what do I need to do? Where do I need to go? Give me something valuable. Find me something valuable, please. You are something valuable. You're past that narcissism stage that says, if it's not important and glamorous, so I could go back and say to people, see how special I was. See, now you'll regret not thinking I'm just the most wonderful person in the world. You're past all that garbage, that trash in your head. And you're finally into your awakened grace. Please, God, just let me stay here. What do you want from me today? Where do you want me to go? Who do you want me to be with? I never want to think that way again. Keep me from that hellhole. Because I can't see you in the world if I think that way. I divide you among the people I feel safe with and the people I don't. I decide you created those people, but not these. I decide you only created the people who believe just like me. And it's okay to bomb the others. What was I thinking? No. The awakened you. It's very challenging to be awakened. Very, very challenging. You have to keep it a secret. You have to keep it a secret. Fly under the radar. Manage your heart and your soul with great attentiveness, kindness, compassion, silence, because you become a real beacon. You move into the next stage. It's a cosmic union. Here is a stage that you are taken into for just a microsecond every now and again. Tiny little microsecond every now and again. It's kind of like, and you're gone. It's like an electric, and you're gone. I think everybody's had the experience of being so happy where they would say, there's no place I want to be but right here, right now. There's no other place. This is exactly where you want to be. Every part of you is in the present moment. Your worries aren't strong. Your regrets aren't throbbing. You don't have any wounds that are bleeding. You simply are fully in love for a moment with the whole of your life and with the people or person you're with. You have a small sample of the nectar of ecstasy. And you think, what a rare moment We say things like, if this moment could go on forever, you know, you couldn't endure that. Do you really realize that? It really would blind you. Do you really think you could live at that altitude of that kind of high-pitched ecstasy? There's a real good chance what you would do is say, can we take this down a notch? You can't live at that level. The adrenaline's too high. The awe is too high. Living in awe is absolutely too much for ordinary consciousness. You can visit awe. You can be in awe, but in small doses. And if you think about it, a tiny dose of being awestruck goes a long way. It goes a long, long way. Now imagine if you were divinely awestruck and you really got hit hard. You got hit hard and it went like whoosh, right through your heart and right into your soul and it knocked you over. And somehow the unity of humanity rushed right into your soul just for a microsecond and it just whoosh, that fast in and out. And you almost collapse from it. The force of that crystal pure love just whoosh, runs through that fast. And in that micro moment, the merger of yourself with all living things is like this pulsating, warm, beautiful, unbelievable living tapestry that is placed in your heart. You know you can't find it again on your own. You just can't get there because it's too big. It's too huge, but it was put there. You know it. You saw it. You were there. You just followed it in. But you're connected now. It's there. The overwhelm. Everybody you see looks like a tapestry to you now. And it changes everything. And what you know at this great cosmic truth is that you settle into this tapestry and you stretch yourself on it when you pray for all of humanity. And you feel those prayers go through this tapestry, light up, just light the tapestry. And you extend yourself as huge as you can and the tapestry as small. Nothing is more ordinary than reaching everyone when the tapestry becomes the size of a washcloth and you as big as you want. How simple is that? It makes so much sense. What makes so much sense is you get your cosmic soul. You get it. And that you don't fear it. You get that and you don't fear it. That you are now called to heal this earth and all of our brothers and sisters. If we don't, we will perish. What is in one is in the whole. We must heal each other. This is our call together now. This is that cosmic, we must awaken and move to that next state, hold all these stages together and realize I have to heal. I expect you to heal for perfectly selfish reasons for me and I for you. We are in another world now where I feel fully comfortable saying, what grace do I have in me to help you? What do you need from me? What do you need from me? This is who we are in this other world. In that world, it would have seemed a peculiar thing to do. We could let each other get away with things in that world we can't afford to let each other get away with in this world. Not because we're facing so many crises and challenges, but because we know better here. And the true spiritual path is one of truth, not one of pain. In that world, it was pain and wounds and who owes you what. You don't play by those rules anymore. If you really want to understand healing and you really, truly want to be a healed person, Then you know what those rules are and you get on with what it is to be whole and conscious. And even if that does not heal your arthritis or cancer, you are still healed if you live by this. And you still maximize your healing, because we redefine healing in this world, and it is no longer measured by what's happening in your body. Your body is secondary. It's measured by what the stamina is of your energetic being. Your body may not be able to get out of a chair, or your body may not be able to run a mile, or your body may be older and infirm, or your body may have a disease in it. But in this world, that does not make you ill. By a long shot. What makes you ill in this world is when you consciously make a decision to harm another person and you know it. And everything intuitively in you says, don't do this. And you hear that voice and you choose otherwise. That's illness. That's illness. When you consciously betray that inner truth and you harm another person by choice, that's the new bar on illness. When you consciously make choices and you know another human being is going to pay the price through their suffering and their life because of something you were guided not to do and you don't care, that's the new illness. We can take care of each other's bodies. We can help each other there. And if you make that effort to do the best you can, then your body will do the best it can. But let's not expect our bodies to do things they cannot do. A 50-year-old body cannot turn around and heal the way a 20-year-old body can. So stop being unrealistic about what you expect of your body. Stop it. They can only do what they can do. But I will never not expect from you a level of integrity, a level of honesty, and a level of spiritual congruence that the journey of becoming conscious is all about. There you have no limitations, not by body, not by age, not by religion, not by anything. If you are on this path of becoming conscious, then that's what it's about. I'd like to close this wonderful series on a practical note about healing, about how do we go about actually healing, illnesses that really do afflict us. Because regardless of the fact that we are in what I consider to be a parallel reality, the other reality still exists, our body. We still confront sufferings. We still have illness, and we still have to set about the task of dealing with the challenges that being in physical form present. That's not going to change. What is changing and will continue to change is the depth to which we understand those challenges. And our capacity to do something about them, to react to them, to pierce the mystery of these challenges, to engage with an illness or a virus symbolically, physically, impassionately. And when I say engage with an illness at a multiple level, we could be dealing with anything now. So I'm going to give you kind of a format of, you know, what do I mean by how to approach any illness, whether you're dealing with a cancer or leukemia or any crisis. The way you approach it now is that you look at it within a story, a narrative outside of yourself. Why do epidemics spring up when they do? The climate has to be right for them. They just don't happen. Nothing just happens. Things happen because wheels were set in motion for them to happen. If you look for only one wheel, you will never, ever find it. One of the mythologies that you need to break down is that you have to picture yourself living in the center of a wheel, living in a hologram now, where there are several reasons for every one thing that happens, not one reason for one thing. The formulas are no longer one per one. Instead, you would be much wiser to understand that the reasons why things happen as they do are because cycles are constantly coming together and triggering beginnings and endings. And that everything that happens in your life is not just manifested at the physical. When you ask, why did this happen? All you are ever asking about is a caboose on a train, the thing you can see. You are never seeing all the energies around it that are just as present and just as active. So the only thing you're ever asking about is, how did this caboose get here? Because you're unable to see the engine or the 200 cars that pulled the caboose into the station. And you're constantly asking about the caboose because you simply cannot yet perceive. You keep asking about the caboose because you yet cannot grasp that the engine is your thoughts, your soul, all the things that configure to make your archetypal patterns that are constantly in motion, and all the choices you have made and have yet to make, all the choices that your next lifetime is making that are interacting with this lifetime. You can't comprehend that. Lifetimes yet to come are occupying some of the cars on that train. Yet to come are occupants on your train. How do you know what is causing some of the what you call crises of your life? You keep looking backwards to one thing, maybe even reducing it to one relationship, a mom, a dad. This is how tiny you think. You squeeze everything into that one person didn't love me enough. I wasn't hugged enough when I was in a diaper. Well, here, I'll give you a hug. Get over it. It exhausts me. Because we are two things simultaneously. We are extraordinarily resilient and tough, while being extraordinarily sensitive. We are both. We are both. We can take a lot, and we shatter in the blink of an eye. Both are true. Both are true. So the art of being a human takes the clever and discerning weave of that delicate thread of sensitivity within an encasement of stamina. And that discernment gives you the lens that says, I can't afford to take my life personally. I can't afford to do it. This world is too big, and there are too many people in this world for me to believe that everything everyone does is all about me. Now, that's just foolish. I can't go there. I can't do that. I haven't got the emotional stamina to, every time I leave this doorway, this house, believe that everything everyone does is all about me. So that if I go to work, everybody's bad mood is because of something I did. That whatever goes wrong in everyone's life, it's because of something I said. Is it me? Is it me? Is it me? I simply have to get a grip on myself. And I would prefer to think it's never me. Not in the narcissistic way, but in the humble way. Thus, the grace of humbleness is going to be your great protection as you squeeze yourself down to size. And that will be the greatest lens as we go into understanding, how do I reshape my understanding of what happens to me? How does a virus happen? How do I see things? Unless you can separate yourself from the events and the things and the illnesses that happen to you, you will never see clearly. And clear sight and truth are going to be your greatest navigating lenses in this new world you live in. Clear sight and truth. In the old world, you could get away with a level of self-deceit. But in this world, where you are now a student of energy anatomy, you're a student of vibrational medicine, you're a student of learning your chakras and your energy system. These are systems that run on being congruent, and they run on truth, and there's nothing you can do about that. If you are not truthful, you jam your circuits. There's nothing you can do about that. That's simply the fuel these systems use. And they prefer, most of all, your capacity to call truth on yourself. You want to heal? That's the only way you got to go. You don't like it? Then go chemical medicine. And just decide, I can't fly that high. I can't fly that high. Then use drugs. That's what they're made for. They're made for people who can't handle truth. Ouch. Well, there it is. Okay. Now, let's take a look then at AIDS. So let's go through AIDS one more time, as it is a virus of this world, as opposed to the last one. It is from the second Big Bang, our time. It didn't exist in the 30s. It didn't exist before the nuclear age. It's a nuclear virus. It's a conscious virus. Why did AIDS happen now? Why now? Could have been any time, but why now? AIDS came in the 60s and in the 70s. What's the symbolic portrait of AIDS? Where did AIDS thrive? Where did it generate? It generated within the populations of people who see themselves as victims, the victim archetype. Within Africa, the victim population. Within America, it was within the gay, prostitute, drug-using cultures. People who saw themselves fundamentally as powerless. But within that victim subculture, that state of mind was such that that particular victim strata spoke to them that said, because you're a victim, I now give you permission to do whatever you want to with yourself. You can break certain laws. You don't have to take care of yourself. You can do whatever you want. You can shove a needle in your arm. You can go into any bathhouse you want. You can sell your body because you feel victimized. You can now do whatever you want here. Your suffering gives you permission to step out of these social parameters, you poor thing. So you can do this. Other people couldn't do that, but you can. You can. That's how the victim archetype spoke. Now, what we did in our society at that time was the victim archetype was unlocked from our Pandora's box. The victim, the saboteur, the child, and the prostitute. These four archetypes, as I examine in sacred contracts, came out very strongly. The wounded child, oh, you poor thing, came out. The inner child. And the victim came out so strongly that it reshaped our legal system. Was this criminal victimized as a child? Well, then the laws have to be more lenient. Don't victimize the children at school. They'll call 911. They'll do this. It's so reshaped our academic system that now teachers are intimidated by their students. On the positive side, children who were victimized by priests, by coaches, the victim has played a phenomenal role. Pre-World War II, there'd be no such thing. No such thing. It wouldn't be allowed to happen in society. Society had no place for victim consciousness. No place for saboteur. No place for prostitute and no place for child. Not at all. Post-World War II, America did nothing but celebrate the child, Walt Disney, magical children, children all over the place. Then when this particular virus came in, is the virus of victim consciousness. Were those who felt victimized within the social populace of the planetary village matched how the planet felt itself? Because the planet itself began to rumble. I too am a victim. And it expressed its own places of victimization in this disease that then organically moved through the immune system of the population, of those that most felt like it does. Because the earth is the largest living creature you will ever meet. It is a living, breathing being. You don't get that. It is not just a sidewalk you walk on. The earth is a living, breathing creature. I need you to think that. I need you to get that. The first manifestation of AIDS is the breakdown of the immune system. The immune system begins breaking down. That's the ozone of the earth. It's completely broken down. Her air broken down. The lungs of the earth, the rainforest, the destruction of all her breathing mechanisms are shot and shattered. This pneumocystis, they're burning her lungs at 5 to 10,000 acres a day in South America. It's her pharmacy in the Amazon. Everything's about money. Kaposi sarcoma, the blood disease, the disease of families, the disease in the blood, the bloodlines, the disease on the skin. This is exactly, if you look at the earth, what's on the surface of the earth, disease of all the rivers, the disease of everything on top of the earth, the disease of the skin of the environment. And then the very name, AIDS, to come to the aid of. Mother Nature has AIDS. She is the ultimate victim of HIV. And those of her children who match that whole sense of being powerless, of seeing themselves as powerless, are the most susceptible. And until we, as a people, pierce through victim consciousness, the vaccine will not be found. A bold statement. No, it's not. It's 1929 and the stock market crashes. Go back and read the newspapers. America talks about itself and says we are financially crippled. It's a language we use. And we have a polio epidemic. We get what we talk about. We get how we feel about ourselves. We are crippled. We become crippled. We even elect a polio crippled president. Because that's how we see ourselves. And then after World War II, read the newspapers, listen to the radios. How did we talk about ourselves? We are financially on our feet again. We said it. We owned it. Jonas Salk finds the vaccine. We were walking again. We were beginning the golden age of America. Epidemics come when they do for reasons. They are a psychic reflection of how the people feel. When you look at yourself, where are we? Let's take it to you now. In order to decode things that happen to you, to bring it down to a practical level, never make the mistake of thinking things shouldn't happen to you. That's your first error. Why not you? Do not see yourself as anyone special, as if somehow or other you've done something or are somebody who deserves to escape, have some kind of escape route, and that you might not get HIV or you might not get the cold, that it couldn't happen to you. Anything could happen to any of us. Anything can happen to any one of us. We are none of us immune to anything. So my practical advice, my counsel to you, is that I'm going to blend the practical with the spiritual. And I'm going to say first, you need to keep yourself humble. You need to maintain a practice of humility in the same way that if you entered a monastery, and I was your spiritual director, that truly would be my first call to you. The first thing we would work on is how toxic your pride is and your attitudes about what you think you're entitled to, who you think you are, how you think the rest of the world should move around you instead of you in it. You have no idea how much that's the source of your suffering and how much suffering you cause other people, which is probably what you do not look at. So the second thing we look at is how much suffering do you cause other people? If you're so interested in what makes you ill, I'm interested in how many people you make sick, because it is a two-way street. What people don't get when it comes to healing is you can't scream constantly about why am I sick and why am I not healing and why am I sick and why am I not healing and not also ask, and who am I making ill? And who am I making ill? Do you think healing's a solo journey? Do you really? I never have anyone ever ask me, what's wrong with me and how can I heal and who have I harmed along the way? Is there anyone I could help heal while I'm healing? Has anyone ever asked me that question? No. Is there anyone I could help heal while I'm healing? It doesn't occur to human beings. They're so self-focused. But if what is in one is in the whole, imagine such a prayer. Is there anyone I could help heal while I walk this journey? Is there anyone? Because I'll do it. It's not about you. What are the laws? What is in me is in everyone. So if there's anyone else suffering this in the privacy of my heart, whatever I go through, I hope it's going to help someone else. Let that be your prayer. Expand your heart into the company of others so that you know you're not alone in whatever you're going through. Do not treat yourself to loneliness. Do not drink of the Kool-Aid of self-pity. Stay away from that well. It's deep, it's dark, and it's lethal. And crawling out of there can take your fingernails right out of your hands. What you do is you tell yourself, whatever it is I'm healing, may others who are feeling this weave themselves into this journey. Because I don't want to go through this just for me. It's not worth it. But if I can lift this from another's heart, someone I may never meet, I don't care. But I'll take them with. Take someone with you. Take someone with you. Make yourself more human. Soul human. Okay? This is how you do this journey in a world that you're a new resident in. Stop asking questions that have no answers and the answers wouldn't do you any good. Stop asking why this happened to you as if it shouldn't have happened to you. That's over with. Now, on the practical end, every single physical illness has physical things that you need to do. If you need to take your meds, take your meds. If you need to watch your nutrition, watch your nutrition. And don't be a whining, spineless 2-year-old about it. Here's the thing that's absolutely true. Whatever you have to do, you bless and you do it with gratitude and gratefulness. If you look at what you have to do in healing and you say, oh God, this is difficult, then it won't help you. Then you may as well go eat cat food. If you look at what needs to be done and the doctor says you need to do this, blend this food and you need to not eat this anymore, but you can't eat this, and you need to take a bath in pomegranate juice once a day, and you need to whatever you're told. I don't care what you're told. I don't care how rigorous it is or not rigorous. Your response is that all? Is that all? To get my life back? To get my life back? Is that all I have to do to get my life back? Is that all you're saying? This is all I have to do to get my life back? And you treat that as a sacrament at an altar. Everything you're doing is a sacrament at the altar, and you are the holy thing you are dealing with. You attend to your healing as a sacrament on an altar, meaning the sacred. You are pulling grace into everything you do, what you apply to your body, what you take into your body. What you do to your body, what you do to your heart, what you do to your mind, every single thing. We are not in the old world before World War II anymore. We're in a world where you have to be mindful that you claim to be on a spiritual path, that you say you're moving toward consciousness, that you talk in terms of having chakras and an energy system. Then treat it. Then work with it. This is what these systems require. They require this type of attention. They require castor oil packs, for example. For those of you suffering with liver disorders or any kind of toxin in the colon area, you take castor oil, you put it on flannel, get a flannel bed sheet and cut it into squares the size of washcloths, put two together, put a couple of tablespoons, tablespoon and a half of castor oil, and you lay it over your colon. I always add a little rose oil and holy water because it does change the vibration. Now, in this new world we're living in, such language as it changes the vibration. Add the sacred oils. This is alchemy now. This is healing alchemy. And you have to do this with a presence of mind. You don't do this over the kitchen sink with friends while you're talking and blasting music. This is called holy ritual. And you do it in exactly that way. This is holy ritual. You do it with a prayer. You're taking oil. You're taking rose oil. You're taking myrrh or frankincense or whatever oil you're using. And what you're actually doing is you're recognizing that really this is just an oil. But through prayer and grace, the oil becomes a conduit of a level of light that can't be accessed without it. Products like oils and holy water or crystals or these sorts of elements that belong to this new world, do they really have healing capacities? Do they actually really do this? And what are the roles of, for example, priests or ordained people in this new world? Do you really need them? Shamans, do you really need them? This is actually a worthy thing to talk about because the healing of each disease is of no consequence. All diseases will be treated the same way when it comes to energy. So you could say, what about cancer? What about leukemia? What about disc problems? It doesn't matter. They're all the same in the world of energy. All of these oils, if I put them all here in front, I'm going to say to you, here's rose oil, here's jasmine, here's lavender, and we go on down the line. And now I want you to picture behind me three columns. And so behind my right hand is column one, where my first, second, and third chakra would be illustrated. Directly behind my head is the middle column, where chakras 4 through 7 are illustrated. Behind my left hand is the third column, where chakras 8, 9, and 10 are illustrated. So I have three columns. My hands are up as if I'm holding up traffic. Again, so behind my right hand, my right arm, is the first column. Like if you just draw three columns on your paper, behind my right, chakra 1, 2, 3. Behind my head to my spine, chakras 4 through 7 going up to my head. And then the next column, which is my elbow to my top of my left hand, chakras 8, 9, and 10. So we've got three columns. All right. In the first column, chakras 1 through 3, I want you to put down lead. Middle is laboratory, and the third is gold. So now we have your alchemical laboratory. We're in the world of lead. Is also the world where we put all of our bottles of oil. And in that world of the first, second, and third chakra, all of these are nice oils that actually have no more potential here than perfume. They're just nice perfume. And so without understanding how to unlock their higher properties, how to access their energy, which is in the 8th, 9th, and 10th column, the third column, then all you're actually going to get from these is the tranquility provided by their fragrance. Which is why these oils are used as beautiful perfumes in that world. In fact, we could say that in that world, they are just perfumes. As we move them to the middle world, the world of the laboratory, that's where a lot of people start working with them. And they start applying them in massage. And they start applying them like in acupressure points. And they start using them. And they know that there's power in these bottles somewhere. But how? How? They know there's something to this. But in this middle world, the language people use is energy. They say there's got to be energy in there. Well, really. These little bottles, this precious oil, is a conduit. Yes, it can pull in a higher energy, but its real power lies in the third column, which is grace. It's access to this high healing vibration at the grace level. Now that requires the ordained prayer, that realm. Not everybody can access that. I mean, you really, really have got to be someone who has a reverence and an inner prayer life. You don't need to go out for that shamanic stuff, beat drums and do all that stuff, or get ordained as a priest or any of that. I'm not talking about that. But I am talking about someone who has developed an inner, deep, private life that somehow heaven itself knows when you've qualified. It's not up to a human being to tell you. It's up to you to go about the task that says, I'm going to climb this inner mountain. And so be it. Maybe I'll make it, maybe I won't. But I need to shift my relationship to who's in charge of life and my life. I need to get a grip on my attitude and my sense of what I'm entitled to in this world and what I'm not entitled to. I need to change places here. And the access to this prayer, to this grace, comes from the more you shrink yourself down to size, the greater somehow becomes the light that comes through you. There's the divine paradox. The more invisible you become, the more visible you become. And the more visible you want to be, the more invisible you end up being. If you only get that divine paradox, and this is the whole irony of surrender. It's like, let me place you where I know you will serve me the most. I will draw the people to you. I will. Trust me, if you just humble up and get rid of that ego that wants so much, because your ego wants what it wants because it's arrogant, because it's angry. You have an angry ego, and an angry, hurt, and defensive ego is danger. It's danger to you, and it's a danger to others. You get hurt too easily. You snap too easily. You expect people to line up and apologize because they've said something to you in the wrong tone of voice. You're an amateur. Get out of here. I can't use you. You're like a car accident. You'll stop the whole highway because someone looked at you the wrong way. You're too weak. You're too weak. You're too weak for the task, and you need to go back to the factory. You have to have someone who can handle human beings as human beings. That's what human beings do. Human beings say bad things. So what? And some of them are going to hit you in the ear. Just to take anything personally is to weaken you. You weaken your stride, and it makes you sick, and it infects your immune system. You have to be strong enough and humble enough not to take them personally. You tell yourself, they would say the very same thing to whomever standing here. You cannot give any human being that kind of power over you. Now, if I'm training your immune system, I'm not going to give you a vaccine. I'm going to give you this lecture. And this lecture builds your psychic immune system more strongly than any vaccine your mama or any doctor's ever going to give you. It's how to deal with psychic free radicals in this world. How to, in the language of my beloved Teresa, hold yourself in your interior castle. How to recognize when somebody's coming at you with a dark force, a fear, a dark fear, and you inwardly say to yourself, my castle, I got to pull my gate up. Put your castle gate up. You look the same. You're still sitting there having lunch with them, but you've just closed off all entry points. They couldn't get in you if they had a battering ram. You're still saying, would you pass the butter? But there is no access point to you. I live there. There's no access point. There's no access. I look